You're watching a Highwire Media podcast.
Thank you so much for joining me today, and if you're new, welcome. So happy to have you, and be sure to click subscribe so that you never miss an upload from the True Crime Never Sleeps show. Of course, I'm your host, Larry Leese, and today's case is actually one that I had seen previously on Unsolved Mysteries, which I'm sure a lot of you are familiar with. It's a very popular show on Netflix. Originally, it aired on cable television way back in the day, and I always really enjoyed it. I think they do a great job of delivering both like ethical and helpful coverage. However, being limited in their time, I always like to do my own research on the cases because they are kind of often do leave out quite a bit just because, you know, they are on a time crunch. They're very limited in time, so they can't really address every single detail. Today, we're going to be talking about a case that is just so shocking because it's hard to explain, but I think this is the case. I just don't understand how it wasn't solved. And when I say that, I mean, I think it should have been solved now. It's so confusing. It makes no sense how someone was able to get away from this. But I still have hope that there will one day be justice for these two victims. And I really think they are on the edge of potentially getting this case solved. They just need, you know, more people to know about it, more push, hopefully someone to come forward with that tip that just, you know, sends them over the edge towards justice. Excuse me. And we're going to be talking about the unsolved murders of Carnell Sledge and Kate Brown. As of right now, the families are really calling for more coverage. They really need more people to know about this case. And up till until recently, when it was covered on Unsolved Mysteries, it was not a very well-known case. The reality is, Carnell and Kate's families have now gone over more than 5 years without answers. And that desperately needs to change. And let me tell you, these two are wonderful people, and that's another reason why this doesn't make any sense. There's really, I mean, as far as I understand, no one in their lives that would stand out, like no reason that they should have been targeted. And without getting too ahead of myself, I mean, I personally believe this, there's a good chance that this was a hate crime. Just that random act of violence fueled by hate, but I don't for sure know that. That's just kind of what my gut tells me. But I'm curious to see what you guys all think. I want to go ahead, jump right in. So let me start out by telling you more about Kate. Kate's full name is Catherine Colby Brown, born on October 12th, 1985, in Olmsted, Ohio, which is just west of Cleveland, to her loving parents, Kim and Tom. She had one big sister, Lauren, one little sister, Alex. She definitely took that role of middle sister very seriously. With her older sister, Kate was always following her around, you know, doing the normal younger sister thing, getting involved in similar interests. And with her younger sister, she always played the role of protective big sister, looking out for her no matter what. Now, Kate is described as someone who is incredibly lighthearted, very carefree, and also described as a little weird. But weird in a good way, you know what I mean? She was goofy and she had this infectious smile, and many of her loved ones say that she just had a heart of gold. And I also learned that Kate was really one of those people who could become friends with anyone, like strike up a conversation with a stranger. She was very open-minded to people. She could have been someone that, you know, just met in a casual way, and soon you'd feel like you were her friend. And I think that's because she was someone who always saw the best in people. And also, she was just very loyal to the people that she loved. Now, Kate also loved yoga, exercising, listened to music. She loved the Cleveland Browns, which I gotta give her credit for, because that's kind of hard to do. She loved volleyball, but above all else, her greatest love was really her family, especially her niece and her nephews. To them, she was really the fun aunt. She was always there for them, very involved in their lives. And they called her Aunt Titi, which I love because she's just kind of cute as a little kid when they can't say like their full name. Now, for the last 7 years before she was murdered, she was working for a company that sourced jewelry to sell on eBay. And she was living in Fairview Park, which is just west of Cleveland. And around the time of her murder, she was in the best physical and mental place of her life. For several years there, Kate had really struggled with anxiety and depression, which is something I know so many of you out there can relate to. And she was really coping by using alcohol, which is also very common. That being said, though, she had finally reached this place in her life where she knew she needed to get better. And in 2017, she completely changed her life around, completely cut out alcohol. By 2019, she really became the healthiest possible version of herself. She lost 100 pounds. Like I said, got sober. It was just in a really great place in life. She made exercising a priority, was eating healthier, and feeling better and more confident than ever. But she's not the only person today that I'm going to be talking about that was absolutely crushing it in life. Carnell, the other victim of the park bench murders, as they are known, is also someone who is just doing amazing things with life at a young age. And he's just so impressive and inspiring to me. He was absolutely crushing it in all aspects of his life. His full name was Carnell Edward Sledge. Born April 3rd, 1979, to his parents Darlene and Carl, and was raised in Bedford, Ohio, which is just southeast of Cleveland. He had one younger brother named Terrence, and just like Kate, Carnell, who also went by Nell most of the time, was an incredible sibling to his brother. He was always a good role model for him and got him involved in sports so that they would always have things to do together. And being in this, you know, role model, leadership sort of position was a big part of his life, even outside of his younger brother. From a very young age, he always took an interest in helping others and loved to involve younger children in the community in activities, such as just playing catch or playing basketball, really any sort of outdoor activity. Leadership seemed to just really come natural to him, and it was a big part of who he was. That side of him really shaped a lot of his adult life. For his career, Nell worked as an audiovisual technician for a company called Crescent Digital, but he also dedicated a lot of his time to volunteering. From 2013 to 2018, he worked with special education students in the Westlake School District and also volunteered at Applewood Centers, which is a nonprofit that provides mental health services to children and young adults. Nell also volunteered with Empower Sports, which is another nonprofit that seeks to enrich the lives of young athletes through sports while promoting kindness, character, and relationships. And I think of all the things he should be remembered for, one of the biggest should be his dedication to volunteering and helping children. A lot of the kids that he worked with called him Coach Sledge, and to this day, they still talk about him. They speak so highly of him. I mean, he was truly beloved by those kids, and he really just made such a big impact on their lives. And I think that's just because he had a really special and unique ability to really connect with the younger kids and to really make them feel special and heard and important. He was so patient and kind, and for him to have made such a lasting impact on their lives, I think just tells you everything you need to know about them. And I think another reason why he was really able to connect with them so much is because he was kind of like a big kid himself. He loved to be goofy and to have fun and just play. And you know, that's actually rare in adults these days. It truly is. His mom, Darlene, said that he was also just not the type of person to get rattled. He was really, really relaxed and level-headed, which is a quality I'm sure served him well in all areas of his life. So I'm sure a lot of you are wondering how Kate and Carnell knew each other and how they became involved in each other's lives. More than a decade before their deaths, Kate and Nell met one night downtown in Cleveland after physically bumping into one another at a bar. And the rest is history. They were just good friends ever since that day. Nell has been described as sort of a big brother role to Kate because he was 7 years older, but they truly made an impact on one another's lives, and it was really a friendship that was based in support. If one of them ever needed something, the other wouldn't hesitate to drop everything they were doing and just be there for them, no matter what it was. And like I said, that was true for over a decade. Now, I will say it was one of those friendships that sort of ebbed and flowed. And I mean, most of us have friendships like this where sometimes they would go months without seeing each other, not for any particular reason. I mean, adult life is just busy. But when they would reconnect, it was like no time had passed. And like I said, if one of them ever called the other needing something, the other would drop everything to be there for them. And that was exactly what happened on June 4th, 2019. But that day ended in a way that no one could have imagined. That evening, around 5:19 p.m., a couple named Tony and Caitlin Vodica had driven into the Rocky River Reservation, which is a part of the Cleveland Metro Parks, with the intention of going kayaking. Now, the Metro Parks is this very vast system of nature preserves, including 18 reservations, which surround the city of Cleveland. It's unofficially referred to as the Emerald Necklace, and it's essentially this network of parks that spans hundreds of miles, where people can often be found walking, jogging, biking, just enjoying nature itself. I've never been there myself, but from the pictures and videos I've seen, it looks actually pretty stunning. And on June 4th, 2019, Tony and Caitlin went there with the intention of kayaking, but when they pulled their car into a small parking lot just off Lorraine Avenue Bridge and Valley Parkway, they stumbled upon what appeared to be a man's body. So Tony was the first to approach him, and when he first saw him, he thought, maybe this was someone who had fallen and just gotten injured, maybe needed help getting up, needed some assistance. But when he got closer, he realized that the situation was much, much worse than he thought. Not only could he see that this man had been shot and was no longer moving, but then just a few feet in front of him, there was the body of a woman lying face down, partially in the water and partially on land. And it looked to him immediately that both victims had been shot very recently and that neither of them were alive. So obviously Tony is panicked and he yells over to Caitlin, tells her to call 911, and that's exactly what she did. And here's the audio from that call. Within minutes of that 911 call being placed, the Metro Parks police showed up and began to process the area for evidence. And depending on what coverage you consume on this case, you will get a different idea about how this investigation was initially conducted. When I first watched the Unsolved Mysteries episode, I mean, there was definitely some criticism aimed at law enforcement in that, but it was sort of on the lighter side. And when I dug a little deeper, I realized it wasn't. I don't know, it's tough. In my opinion, the police work on this case and the support of the family hasn't been exactly stellar. It hasn't been horrible, but at first I really thought they were giving it their all. And that really doesn't seem to be the case the more I dug in. Again, definitely not the worst case I've seen, but definitely not something you could consider stellar, in my opinion. So let me just explain how all that went down, and then I think you guys will understand better what I'm trying to say. When responding officers arrived at the scene, they observed the same thing that Tony and Caitlin saw, which was an adult black male lying face down on the grass beside a park bench, along with an adult white female about 6 feet in front of him, but she was lying face down partially in the water. And at first, they weren't exactly sure what happened. Of course, they thought, you know, maybe this was a murder-suicide. Or obviously, it could have been a double homicide. So the first thing they started to do was look for a weapon. But when a weapon wasn't located, it became clear that this was, in fact, a double homicide. And I guess, in my opinion, because this was such a busy park, very public, tons of people going by, walking by, riding their bikes by, through as this was all happening, I believe that this should have been immediately treated as a crime scene. And it just wasn't. I guess I just don't see the harm in treating this as it's a worst case scenario and then, you know, backtracking if needed. But instead, precious time went by where people were able to continue walking, biking through the area, potentially contaminating the crime scene, and also allowing potential suspects to get away. Now, in one source, I learned that the area was taped off and that the roads were shut down within 17 minutes. But another report said that it took up to 45 minutes. But either way, those, in my opinion, are both a significant amount of time. But anyways, regardless of the time it took, here's what they learned right off the bat. When Metro Parks detectives began to process the scene, they found a total of 3 shell casings, and this was a match to the number of bullet wounds that they found on the victims, and this was later confirmed by an autopsy. Nell had been shot 2 times in the back of the head, and Kate had been shot once in the same place. So, very brutal and obviously execution style, and just overall shocking. But these shell casings provided more information than just the number of shots fired. For starters, it was determined that these casings were from a small weapon and that the gun was fired at close range. And I think this is pretty common knowledge, but when you fire a gun, those casings are going to fall pretty close to where the shooter is standing, and they were found in close proximity to the bodies, which tells us that the shooter was pretty close to the victims when they fired the weapon. But here's the thing, firearm murders can be a lot more difficult to solve, because oftentimes there's no trace evidence left behind. Because they couldn't trace these casings back to a specific person's firearm, it made things a whole lot more difficult. They also found blood on the back of the park bench, and it was Nell's blood, which told him that he had likely been shot from behind while he was still sitting down. And while this isn't necessarily 100% confirmed, the placement of their bodies really says a lot when it comes to what people think could have happened. Considering Nell was still near the park bench when he was found, it's believed that he was shot first in the back of the head. And then, when Kate got off the bench to try and run away, her killer managed to shoot her a single time, also in the back of the head. Because she was found a few feet in front of Nell, and particularly in the water, it's believed that she must have tried to run forward to get away. And if you're watching this episode, you can see that the water is literally right there, like, in front of the bench. It's then believed that Nell was shot a second time in the back of the head, and maybe that's because the first shot just didn't kill him, although we're not 100% certain. I will say, of course, it is possible that Nell was shot twice before Kate was even shot. But considering she didn't get that far away from the first shot being fired, although it happens fast, many people believe that Nell was shot first, then Kate tried to run, she was shot, and then the killer went back and shot Nell a second time. However, no one knows exactly how it happened, but really the order doesn't matter too much. What really matters is that two innocent people, two genuinely good souls, were murdered in broad daylight, and their killer needs to be brought to justice. After detectives looked at the crime scene itself and the condition of the bodies, they turned to the parking lot to see if maybe they could find any potential suspects, learn any more information, or more information about the victims. And it turns out that both Kate and Nell's cars were parked in the lot. And for those of you who aren't watching this episode, I do want to specify that this wasn't some big parking lot. It's more of like a small turnoff on the road, just space for a couple of cars. But anyways, detectives ran their license plate, of course, and that's how they made the identification on who the victims actually were. But here's what was immediately strange. Nothing in their car had been stolen. The cars themselves had been stolen, so this clearly wasn't any type of robbery. I mean, both victims' phones, wallets, and keys were either in their cars or still in their pockets. So the idea that this could have been a robbery gone wrong is, of course, not completely out of the question, but it seems quite unlikely. So the two bodies were sent to the county medical examiner's office that day, and meanwhile, in the early morning hours of June 5th, their families were being notified with the worst news you could ever possibly get as a parent. Keep in mind, by this point, detectives themselves didn't know if or how these victims knew each other. Around 2 in the morning, Carl Sledge, Nell's husband, dad, got a knock at his front door, and he never could have imagined the news that he wasn't about to receive. Darlene and his mother had been asleep, so he went and woke her up. And honestly, at first, they thought the detectives had gotten the wrong person. They just could not have imagined that their son, Nell, who was dead. And when they first started going over everything with them, the first thing they did was actually show them a picture of Kate to see if they knew her. And they actually didn't. Then they brought out a picture of Nell. And as you can imagine, it was just the most earth-shattering moment that they could have ever gone through. Darlene said that once she got the news and saw the picture of him, she got up from the table, just went into her room and cried for hours in just horrific pain and confusion. She just did not understand how this could have happened to her son. And truth be told, they really weren't given a lot of information other than Nell had been shot and that they didn't believe it was related to any kind of robbery. Then Kate's family said they got even less information. Detectives came to their house around 3 a.m. Her dad, Tom, said that at first he thought he misheard them when they said that Kate was dead. He was just, you know, totally shocked, couldn't wrap his mind around that. And I guess all they really said was that Kate was deceased, that she was found in a park, and something about a gun. So at first, for the first couple hours, they believed that she had taken her own life in this park, and they didn't even know about Nell at this point. They didn't really get many details. I mean, I'm sure it was a whirlwind, so who knows if, you know, things were missed or anything like that, but they were just completely shocked and confused. I mean, this made no sense to them. And it wasn't until the next day when they realized that she hadn't taken her own life. They saw it reported on the news that Kate had been killed and that Nell was also with her and had been killed as well. Even though Nell's family didn't know Kate, Kate's family knew Nell. They knew that the two of them had been friends for over a decade and how closely they had supported one another over the years. And Nell's mom just explained it, that, you know, he was a little more private. They had a lot of friendships that they didn't know about. He kind of just did his own thing. So it wasn't a shock to them that he had this, you know, decade-long friendship with her, and they had no idea. But either way, at this point, both families have been clued in into what actually happened. And I don't think words can even articulate the devastation they were feeling. So the following day, June 6th, a press conference was held where some, but not a whole lot of information was shared. Originally, they said, quote, on June 4th, 2019, at approximately 5:22 p.m., the Cleveland Metro Parks Police received a report of two deceased individuals in the Rocky River Reservation. Responding officers located Sledge, a 40-year-old male, and Catherine Brown, a 33-year-old female, north of the Lorraine Road Bridge, east of Valley Parkway. Cleveland Metro Parks Detective Bureau is leading the homicide investigation and has received support from the Bureau of Criminal Investigation as well as the County Medical Examiner's Office. Currently, we believe that this is an isolated incident, and overall, the safety of the parks is not in question. Our thoughts are with the victims' families, and we will work as hard as possible to conduct a thorough investigation to bring justice for the families of Catherine Brown and Sledge. Excuse me. Then the medical examiner spoke briefly, saying, quote, I wanted to release the causes of death for the two individuals that the chief mentioned. Miss Brown died of a gunshot wound to the head. Mr. Sledge died of gunshot wounds to the head. Both of the manners of death were homicide. And as the chief said, I can confirm our preliminary investigation reveals nothing other than this looks like an isolated incident. And we join the Metro Parks Rangers in offering our condolences to the Brown and Sledge families. We will be releasing a paper notification of the causes of death later this morning. So, of course, in the early days of the investigation, they decided to do a deep dive into both of their lives to see if there was, you know, anything glaringly obvious that could point to who could have possibly done this. Especially considering it really didn't look like to be a robbery gone wrong, they thought maybe there was someone in one of their lives, or maybe someone that they both knew, who could have been responsible. But as they looked more into their lives, it really didn't seem like that was the case either. I mean, neither of them had any debts or any enemies or something they did that pissed another person off. And as far as they could tell, there was no one in either of their lives that would obviously want to do something like this. So their next step was to look into their lives leading up to their murders, especially that day. And specifically, why were the two of them meeting up? Now, that is really the million-dollar question here that no one has been able to answer to this day. Nobody knows why they chose to meet up that day. We do have a little bit of context, but not any actual reason, so let's get into that. Like I mentioned earlier, Kate was living in an apartment in Fairview Park, which is only about 2 miles from the bench where she and Nell were both killed. I also said that she had lost 100 pounds recently and was really prioritizing her physical and mental health, and the Rocky River Reservation was actually where she found a lot of peace and healing. She would go on walks there, meet up with her mom to play cards, and walk with her too. She just loved the area and went there almost every day. So she was very familiar with and really loved the place where she was murdered, which is kind of rather just heartbreaking to think about. It was truly a safe place for her where she, you know, just was able to gather solitude and work on her fitness. And it was a big part of her health and healing journey. So the fact that she and Nell had chosen to meet up there that day wasn't out of left field at all. Using surveillance footage and cell phone data, detectives were able to put together a rough timeline for that day. According to data, Kate had arrived home to her apartment and then signed into her apartment complex gym at 3:38 p.m. Then at 4:02 p.m., she received a text from Nell asking if she wanted to meet up. She then called him at 4:10 p.m., and they proceeded to talk on the phone for about 10 minutes. Now, unfortunately, investigators can't actually listen to this call, but from context clues, detectives think they were probably talking about where they were going to meet up because there were no texts specifically saying, let's go meet at the park, or anything like that. Anyways, Carnell had left work at 4:24 p.m., and then at 4:31 p.m., Kate signed out of her gym. The next thing we know is that 5:01 p.m., Kate's gray Toyota is seen on a police cruiser's dash cam driving into the park, followed by Nell's red Mazda, which is seen 2 minutes later, captured by that same camera. And because of how close that police cruiser was parked in relation to the bench, it's believed they arrived in that parking lot around 5:04 p.m. They then believe they got out of their cars and sat down on that park bench together. There's one final timestamp, 5:08 p.m., which is when Kate had unlocked her phone for the last time. This actually ended up being a really important piece of data because if you remember, Caitlin and Tony had arrived at 5:19 p.m., which essentially leaves an 11-minute window from when they arrived at the park to when they were killed, so a very short amount of time. And to bring this full circle, remember how earlier I was sort of calling the question how quickly detectives shut down the streets and began processing the crime scene? Well, it seemed to have been even more casual than I thought. In an article from Cleveland Scene News, it's reported that Caitlin described feeling like investigators handled the crime scene poorly. She said that she thought it was all done very casually and that many people were just allowed to leave. I guess there was a guy walking his dog right through the area, and there was just no concern that he may be contaminating the scene. Which I also don't understand. If you're out there walking the a dog or something, or jogging or riding your bike or whatever you're doing out there, and you see a scene with a couple of cops around, wouldn't you kind of like avoid the scene? You know, just go around it, go walk your dog someplace else. Like, if I see a bunch of cops on the side of the road, I'm not going to walk right next to them and go, hey, what's going on? I'm going to avoid that little area so I don't, you know, contaminate anything that they might be using. She also, so this lady, Caitlin, also thought it was weird that they didn't close down the road right away, and that investigator seemed to touch their bodies very quickly. And this is the same article that says it took them 45 minutes before shutting down the road, which is a long time if you ask me. Her husband, Tony, said that to him. It felt like they were just treating this like a stolen package situation, not like two people had just been murdered. But here's the craziest part of all, is that I haven't gotten to yet. It turns out that there was a man sitting in his truck in the same parking lot while the murders took place. This guy who worked as a roofer was actually 125 feet from that bench and was an eye shot of it all happening. However, he claims he didn't see or hear anything. He told detectives that he actually did see both Kate and Nell drive up to the area, and that he was just sitting in his car writing work orders on his laptop when it actually happened. And according to detectives, this is confirmed. He willingly gave them his laptop, and the data shows that he was using it in that window of time where they believe the victims were murdered. Now, there is definitely a lot of speculation, a lot of questioning around this guy. People think it's very strange that he didn't hear this happening. However, there are a couple explanations about how he could not have heard the shots being fired. For one, a small caliber weapon is just not as loud as other guns, which, you know, you'd still think would be possibly loud enough where he would have heard it. I'm not an expert in guns by any means, but it's not like it's silent. However, and detectives believe this, and this makes the most sense to me. The killer probably, could have been, I think it's pretty likely, using a silencer. That would have suppressed the sound a lot, to the point where you can barely hear it, even if you're pretty close up. But from 125 feet, you probably wouldn't hear it at all. And then you got to think about the fact that maybe his job as a roofer played a role in things. I mean, he's very used to hearing loud sounds. Is it possible that he did hear something and it just didn't register? I don't know. I'm just trying to make sense of it because the data on his laptop shows that he was working on the laptop when the murders occurred. So it just couldn't have been him. I guess you can never say never. It just seems very unlikely with the information we do have. I do wish I had more information to share about this person, but this is all that has been reported because I'm sure a lot of you have questions about him, but as far as I know, he's been cleared. But he was the first person who was considered a person of interest in the case, but he was not the last. There are actually a handful of other people that detectives looked into, so let's go over them. Let's go over those guys, shall we? First of all, we have the exes. In the beginning, Kate's family had some questions about Nell's ex-girlfriend. Now, she and Nell had met online about a year before he was killed, and they dated for about 6 months, but they broke up when they realized that they were just better off as friends. But I guess the two of them had recently decided that they were going to give the relationship another chance. In fact, they were texting just hours before Nell was murdered, and then basically Kate's family feels that her reaction to Nell's death was over the top. They felt like it was performative. But detectives did end up conclusively ruling her out. Not only was her gun not a match to the weapon used to kill Nell and Kate, but she also had a rock-solid alibi. So she's off the table. And then there's Kate's ex. Apparently Kate and her ex-boyfriend had dated years ago, but it definitely was not a healthy relationship by any means. It ended up being really toxic, but recently I guess Kate had been seeing him secretly. It turns out that two of them had hung out the night before her murder. Police checked security cameras at her apartment and saw him coming and leaving that night. And the thinking was, you know, maybe they had gotten into a fight and he decided to kill her because of it. And another thing, kind of on the same note, is that not long before they were killed, Kate had actually told one of her sisters that Nell told her that he thought the two of them would end up together one day. Now, to my knowledge, and of course, no one truly knows, but it is believed that nothing ever happened between them romantically, that their relationship was purely a friendship as far as everyone knows. But according to her sister, that is something that Nell had told her. And going back to her ex-boyfriend as a possible suspect, they thought, you know, maybe Kate had told him something similar, or told him something about Nell, and then he became angry about it. Maybe the two of them were talking about getting together. I mean, no one knows. And so it seemed like he could have just been a potential suspect. But once again, he had a solid alibi and was ruled out. And again, just to reiterate, there is no proof that there was any type of argument between the two of them. It's just purely a theory. But then there's this guy from Tinder, and this is actually really freaky. I guess the Friday night before Kate was murdered, she had gone on a date with this guy that she met on Tinder, and it did not go well, to say the least. I mean, she was totally creeped out by this guy. He just gave her bad vibes. She actually said that his eyes were, quote, black. I don't know what that means, or if maybe that was just a metaphor. I don't know if they were actually black or anything, but overall, she was like, this isn't it. It was not a match, to say the least. And luckily, she had good instincts and left the date early. And then, I'm assuming it was like the next day or something, she ended up finding out that this guy murdered or hurt someone. She texted her sister saying that he told her that he had stabbed someone because this dude pulled a knife on him. So, of course, investigators were like, what the hell is going on here? Maybe this is our guy. But they looked into him further, and he had an alibi that was totally verifiable. So again, he was ruled out as well. They were able to confirm that he was in southern Ohio, not even close to where she was killed. And as you can imagine, not knowing who did this was just eating away at these families. And then the other thing that was just really eating away at them is wondering why the two of them had met up. I mean, obviously they're friends, they've been for a decade, and they could have just chosen to meet up to catch up. But their families were wondering, was there more to the reason they decided to meet up that day? And to this day, nobody knows why. And just as a reminder, their text messages only talked about when they were meeting up, and it's like the logistics of it. They didn't talk about why. They had that phone call, and unfortunately, there's no data from the phone call, so we don't know what they had talked about. It's assumed that they were probably speaking about why they were meeting up on the call, but nobody knows why. And that's really the biggest question here. Nell's parents say they don't know what was so important that he would have asked to see her that day, because at 5 p.m. that evening, he was actually supposed to be at his grandmother's house for a family dinner that he had planned. Family dinner is something that they did a lot. They were all super close, and like I said, that one for June 4th happened to be Nell's idea, and if he was going to be late or miss it for any reason, they just know he would have texted or called. That's just the type of guy he was. So they can't understand why he would have driven to the park, which was in the opposite direction of his grandma's house. So in their mind, they're thinking, it must have been something important if he wanted to meet up with her that day. You know, kind of last minute, when he had these plans that evening at 5 p.m., which were important to him. So what was it that was so important? Now, one of Kate's sisters wonders if maybe he wanted to talk to her about being more than friends. But again, we just don't have any information to confirm or deny that. And obviously, the biggest question is, what would any of that have to do with them being murdered, or does it have anything to do with them being murdered? Which brings me to the theories in this case. Now, there are a few main theories to go over, and with the little information that has been made available to the public, it's really hard to know which of these holds more weight, but I'll go over each one of them, and maybe you guys can tell me what you think. And to start off, let's go back to the idea of a robbery gone wrong. Now, I know I've already spoken about this, but I wanted to bring up just one more to keep it in your minds. It's possible that this was a robbery gone wrong. It seems very unlikely, considering nothing was taken, but there's always that possibility that the perpetrator, you know, had killed them, was planning on robbing them afterward, but then someone walked by or something happened when they got spooked and they took off. Again, to me, it is very unlikely, and I'm sure most of you would agree. I know investigators definitely agree, but something that is more likely, in my opinion, this is what I believe happened, and I think most people feel this way, is that this was a random attack, that it quite possibly could have been a hate crime. As we all know, we are unfortunately shared this planet with a lot of very hateful, evil, and racist people. And it would not shock me if someone had come across a black man and a white woman, didn't like that, and they killed them for that reason alone. I think it's for sure in the realm of possibility. Again, in my opinion, this is what I lean towards the most. I think a disgusting, hateful person could have seen these two and just murdered them as a result of their prejudice. And let's just look at the data that backs this theory up. The FBI Hate Crime Statistics Program reported a rise in hate crimes nationwide in 2019 when these murders occurred, and 57.6% of these crimes were race, ethnicity, or ancestry related. And that's just the hate crimes that were reported, so it's likely higher than that. Not to mention, in 2019, Cleveland had 30 hate groups reportedly operating in that area, which is hard to even wrap your mind around. So yeah, the theory that this could have been a hate crime to me totally checks out. And it's something that is not lost on either of their families. People have also speculated on whether or not this could have been gang-related. However, investigators don't feel like that this is as likely of a theory. Typically, gangs are going to go after other gang members, and neither Kate nor Nell were in the gang. So that theory kind of falls flat. Definitely not out of the realm of possibility, but again, very unlikely. One thing I will say, though, is that in the summer of 2019, after Nell and Kate were murdered, there were two other violent encounters that were reported in the Rocky River Reservation. In late July, a woman reported that she was robbed at gunpoint by two men, one of which was wearing a ski mask. And just one day later, a park employee and his mom were driving when they were flagged down by a driver on the side of the road in the park. He said that when they pulled over, he thought he saw someone in the passenger seat of the vehicle holding a gun. Not completely sure, but that's what he thought he saw. So luckily, he sped off before anything could have happened. And at first, the FBI and the Metro Parks Police said that they were considering these as possibly being connected. However, not long after that, they basically said, never mind, they're not related. We don't have a lot of information as to why they think that, but that's what they said. And then, of course, another big theory in this case is that one or both of the victims were targeted specifically. I know I mentioned earlier that detectives didn't find anything or anyone in their lives other than the people who had already been ruled out that suggested this be the case, but it definitely doesn't rule it out. And we all know that statistically, you are more likely to be murdered by someone you know than someone you don't. But what's hard about this theory is that neither family believes that their loved one was the person who was targeted. And in the Unsolved Mysteries episode, when they're both being... When they're both being interviewed, both families, people in their families, suggest that they believe it was the other person who was targeted. Like, people in Nell's family believe that Kate was targeted, and that was someone in her life or something going on in her life. And Kate's family believes the opposite, that it was possibly someone in Nell's life, and that he was the one who was targeted. So it's a difficult situation. And as far as I know, as far as what's been reported, neither family has, like, an exact situation that can point to or an exact theory, like, X happened, and therefore that may have led to Y. You know what I mean? So really, there's nothing solid to back up that theory at all. But again, people, you know, have, you know, situations in their lives that they don't tell their family about, or people in their lives that their families don't know about, so you can't rule it out as a possibility. Some have speculated that since Nell was shot twice, that maybe he was the target. But I think you could just as easily argue that he was shot twice because maybe the first shot didn't kill him right away. Or you can consider that maybe he was shot twice because this was a hate crime, and it was somebody racist who had more aggression towards him. And honestly, I haven't seen anyone else report that, but that's just something that I was kind of thinking about. But I feel like overall, it's just really hard to form any opinion because there's just so little to go on. And here's the crazy thing, and this was actually kept under wraps at first. Back in 2019, a person wrote an anonymous letter to the Fox 8 I-team claiming to know who the killer was. They said that it was a woman who had gotten into some type of argument with Nell and then just started shooting. Now, I actually was able to find this very blurred screenshot of the letter, so I'm going to do my best to read what I think it says, but just keep in mind that I'm not totally sure. Here's my best guess from what I can tell. I have seen the news reports that the killer or killers of Carnell Sledge and Kate Brown haven't been found. No suspects. The killer was a woman. I don't know how she knew them or why she happened to be there that day. She parked out of sight and walked to the beach where Carnell was sitting. Kate had walked closer to the water's edge to look at something. To best describe the woman is to take Reba McEntire from The Reba Show. She best fits the description of the woman, and then cuts off and picks back up. Away from the beach, not my business, but were the two talking marriage? Don't believe this was the motive. I hit a snag. I thought I had a name. But who said the name wasn't Carnell or Kate? It was a white man sitting on the bench with sandy brown hair and glasses like Drew Carey. He was looking behind the bench at a woman. He said, "For God's sake, Amy, put the gun down." Now, obviously, this letter is a little incoherent to say the least, but it's still important nonetheless. Fox 8 says that they immediately turned it over to the FBI when they got it, but it wasn't until 2021 that the FBI came out asking for the writer to come forward and provide more information. So I'm not sure why it took them so long to ask for that, but here's what's frustrating. It turns out this person did come forward, and they were not an actual witness. It was someone who said they had a vision, a that's so Raven moment, you could say. So obviously that was a dead end, which is really frustrating. But I also want to bring up something that Kate's family has said, which I completely agree with. They believe that whoever committed these murders really knew what they were doing. Because if you think about it, the crime scene and their injuries, they were shot three times in total between the two of them. And of course, there were only three shell casings found at the scene. which means that person did not fire off the gun more than that, as far as we know, unless other shell casings were removed, which seems unlikely. So it seems like this person had experience with guns. And even though it seems that they were shot at close range, it's believed that Kate did try to get up and run away after she saw Nell get shot. And of course, this is not confirmed, but it seems like that was probably the case. And then, she was shot from the water in the back of the head. And obviously, that's not a very big target. Plus, she was moving. So it really does seem like someone who had experience, right? And of course, this is America. A lot of people do have experience with guns. So I don't know what there is to do with this information, but I think it's something to consider. But speaking of the crime scene, I want to go back to that for a minute, because that also just plays a huge role in all of this. I started to mention earlier just how big the Rocky River Reservation is, but I think it's super important that we talk about the location of where this took place. The day that Kate and Nell were murdered, it was a beautiful 75 degree day, early June, which is the peak of people starting to get back outside for summer. So to say that this park was busy would truly be an understatement. I mean, people are out there walking, running, walking their dogs, riding their bikes, kayaking, picnicking, I mean, you name it, people were there. And so their families just have a hard time believing that nobody saw anything. They really feel like someone had to have seen something. Maybe it's not the case of someone withholding information, maybe didn't realize they saw something important. It can be crucial, key piece of evidence they need to move this case forward, because how were two people shot in such a busy area in broad daylight at like the most beautiful time of day, golden hour, right in the summer? It's really hard to believe no one could have seen this happening, or heard anything, or seen someone running from the scene. Nothing. It's just unreal. And I mean, it shows you how busy it was that someone came across their bodies so quickly after they were murdered. And then the other big question is, how did this person get away without anyone seeing anything? I mean, for one, it's possible that they just left on foot. That's probably the most likely scenario. The park is really big, and there actually was a hiking trail not far from where the bench is. And this seems a little bit more risky, but it's possible that this person, as soon as they committed the murders, just tried to blend in and looked like they were walking through the park. So someone could have absolutely seen them that day and just not realized what they were seeing. And then, of course, another idea is that they drove off. Valley Parkway is the road that runs through the Rocky River Reservation, and it would have been very easy for them to have gotten into their car and driven off. So I guess that's probably just about as likely as them walking away on foot. Not to mention, there's also two major interstates that run through that area as well. So they could have gotten away pretty quickly. But according to detectives who have who say that they've scoured license plate readers and all other available data, nothing has jumped out to them as suspicious. Or it's possible that something has jumped out to them, but that information has been made public for whatever reason. One thing that they have said is that they don't believe that either of them were specifically followed into the park. And I'm assuming they just based that on the dash cam footage that picked up both of them entering the park. So that really makes you think that it really could have been a wrong place, wrong time situation, or someone who just got angry seeing a mixed race couple in their minds. I mean, obviously, they weren't actually a couple as far as we know, but someone absolutely could have seen that and just done this out of pure hatred. I will say, though, it seems that detectives have kept a lot of information close to the vest. I don't have anything to specifically back it up, but that they have something we don't know, but that is possible. And I hope that's the case. They have something more solid that they are holding back for a specific reason. But overall, this case is just truly hard to know. Horrible situation, no matter how you spin it. One thing that is really good to hear is that the FBI actually did get involved in this case very early on. Now, the FBI typically don't get involved in regular homicide cases unless there's some federal element to it. But in this case, they were asked to assist, and they agreed to help. And it had been 20 years since the Metro Parks Police had a homicide case on their hands. That's how rare it is for this area. So of course, they were quick to bring in additional resources, which, major credit to them, because there are a lot of cases and agencies out there who don't want to bring in additional resources because of pride or, you know, whatever it is, and families end up having to beg them to bring in other help. Some of them are just stubborn, so that to me was good to hear. They also brought in the Ohio Bureau of Investigation, you know, and in those days, in weeks, hope still seemed to be very much alive. The FBI announced on June 12th, 2019, that they were offering a $20,000 reward for information. And that was the same day that loved ones gathered at the park for a balloon release and vigil in honor of the victims. Later that month, on June 24th, another press conference was held when they asked for the public's assistance in helping solve this case. But after this, weeks went by and it didn't seem like they were any closer to catching the person who was responsible for these murders. Now, Kate's sister, Lauren, actually went through Kate's journal, which she said was incredibly difficult. But she did that so that they could try and find anything that could explain what happened. But she wasn't able to find anything. And I say this so often, but it's so true. For those families out there who have no answers, no closure, or understanding as to what happened to their loved one, it's truly torture. I truly can't imagine what it would be like living every day without any of these answers, having no idea what could have possibly happened, no potential lead, just having to sit there and wonder, and try to come up with all these theories on your own and piece together what you do have, and still be left with nothing. It's just horrendous. There are no words. Kate's family has specifically shared that everywhere they go, looking around at all the people, even at the grocery store, they're wondering, could that be the person who killed her? And I just imagine that would be like, it's horrible. And sure, detectives were keeping them in the loop at first, but despite all their efforts, there still aren't any answers. And how do you begin to swallow that pill? So they've continued to turn to the public for help in hopes that someone somewhere maybe knew something. And that's upsetting. That's horribly upsetting because Kate and Nell aren't here now, and as a result of this abrupt, violent act. Kim says she believes Metro Parks Police and the FBI are doing all they can as they actively investigate. But it does pose new difficulties, which each passing day, FBI Special Agent Vicki Anderson says detectives want to hear from anyone who was in the park that day or who has heard anything that may help. She says it's still unclear if the killer knew the victim. The Metro Parks say police have upped patrols in that area. Kate's family puts up signs pleading for tips as they await help answers. By October of that year, the reward climbed to $30,000. But the most significant leap occurred in February 2020. And that month, Kate's family contributed an additional $70,000, bringing the reward to $100,000. And of course, the hope was that this much money would just make someone come forward. Kate's sister, Alex, spoke alongside her father, Tom Brown, that day as they announced an increase in the reward for information that helped solve the Metro Parks murder mystery. Metro Parks Rangers and the FBI acknowledged that they don't have much to go on, but they remain relentless, promising to work the case as if it happened yesterday. By February 2020, authorities were saying that they investigated over 100 tips related to the case, but they still needed the public's help. And to try and help encourage the public to come forward, the victims' families ended up making signs and started putting them up at the Rocky River Reservation. So now, here we are, more than 5 years later. Two innocent people, Kate Brown, Carnell, and Nell Sledge, were murdered in broad daylight in a public park during rush hour on a beautiful summer day with people all around. And still, no arrests have been made, no charges have been filed, no one has been held accountable. There are so many questions that remain unanswered. Why did they meet that day? Who could have done this? Was it a targeted attack or hate crime? How did no one see anything? And why has so little progress been made, even after all this time? This is the kind of case that makes you lose sleep, because it truly doesn't make sense. And that's what makes it so terrifying and so infuriating. Because this didn't happen in the shadows. This wasn't in a late night alley or a dark parking lot. This happened in the Rocky River Reservation, in a safe, suburban, family-friendly public park in Cleveland. And if it could happen there, it can happen anywhere. If there is anyone out there who saw something, heard something, or even remembers something that seemed small or strange that day, it could be the missing piece. The reward for information that leads to an arrest is still at $100,000. You can leave it a tip anonymously or call Crime Stoppers at 216-252-7463. With that, that is our episode for this Cold Case Friday of the Park Bench Murders. Let me know your theories or thoughts in the comments section below. What do you think happened? And if you want to support the channel, you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/TCNS. As always, thank you so much for watching and listening. We'll see you next time.
Big news! The sale of the season is here. It's Wayfair's Black Friday sale, and it's on now. Right now, get up to 80% off everything home and everything you need for the season ahead. Save on quality furniture for every room in the house. Essentials for the guest room, whether it's new bedding or a new mattress. Kitchen and dining must-haves for all your hosting needs. And seasonal home finds like throw pillows and decor. Or favorites that you'll use all year long. And with amazing doorbuster deals from November 27th through December 2nd, you can shop the things you love at even lower prices at Wayfair. Plus, you can sit back and relax with Wayfair's fast and easy shipping. Everything home comes straight to your home. And the best part? Free delivery just in time for the holidays. This Black Friday, Wayfair deals are bigger and better than ever. There's no place like home for the holidays. And no place like Wayfair for Black Friday savings. So don't wait. Black Friday ends soon. Shop Wayfair's Black Friday sale now and save up to 80% off at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.